6'6" above sea level. I grab the mic because I like to take you to another mental level. Low power frequency radio modulation. And good afternoon. Welcome to this, the Thursday edition of A Public Affair. I'm your host for this hour. My name is Alan Ruff. You know, over the past few years, the Department of Homeland Security and local enforcement officers have engaged in widespread domestic spying on occupied Wall Street activists, among others, on the shaky premise that these activists pose a terrorist threat. Often, Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies, in conjunction, have coordinated with the private sector and working on behalf of or in cooperation with various Wall Street firms and other companies that the peaceful protesters have criticized. With us to discuss the numerous issues involved in such surveillance of domestic protest is Bo Hodai. He is the major author, publisher of DBA Press and the Center for Media and Democracy's recent report entitled Dissent or Terror, How the Nation's Counterterrorism Apparatus in Partnership with Corporate America Turned on Occupy Wall Street. Bo Hodai is a freelance reporter, again, a regular contributor to the Center for Media and Democracy, which, by the way, of course, many of you may know is based here in Madison, and he is the publisher of DBA Press. Bo Hodai, welcome to WRT.
Helen, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's good hearing your voice. Where are you, by the way, right now? Where are we speaking to?
I'm in southern Arizona, down in the southeast corner of the state.
Oh, I hope you're watching.
Not too far from Mexico.
I hope you're watching your back down there. Well, again, welcome. Bo, let's jump right into this. In brief, fill our listeners in on what you and others have uncovered.
Basically, as you said, one of the key findings of the report was that these fusion centers, you know, counterterrorism, Homeland Security, fusion centers have been working in close partnership with corporate entities, and that also these fusion centers have been heavily monitoring the activities of those, or at least over the course of 2011-2012, were heavily monitoring the activities of activists engaged in the Occupy Wall Street movement. And in some cases, they were sharing information, intelligence gathered through various means with the very corporate entities that Occupy Wall Street protesters were protesting.
Now, it wasn't just Wall Street, of course, but it was much larger than
right.
that.
Right. Yeah, the report, it's the central narrative of the report, details events that took place in Phoenix, Arizona, with Occupy Phoenix and the Arizona Counterterrorism Information Center, otherwise known as ACTIC. It's commonly referred to as the Arizona Fusion Center. And that being the central narrative, it's sort of the skeletal framework on which other discussion of other fusion centers and other, you know, counterterrorism entities, surveillance or monitoring of Occupy groups nationwide is hung.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. I had a sudden silence there. For our listeners that aren't familiar, explain what the fusion centers are and what their origin is.
Sure. Fusion centers are a intelligence sharing cooperative, basically, that engage law enforcement, counterterrorism, homeland security personnel, from municipal, county, state, and federal agencies. In a fusion center, you can have representatives or, you know, personnel at your local police station chatting it up with, you know, FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force people, and of course, Department of Homeland Security, Office of Intelligence and Analysis, as well as the Office of Infrastructure and Protection Personnel. And their origins, basically, of course, you know, like many things, date back to September 11th, 2001. Fusion centers basically sprang up through a series of initiatives that were called through both federal legislative action and executive orders issued by former President George W. Bush. I think the most key of all of these pieces of federal legislation would be the Intelligence Reform and Terrorism Prevention Act of 2004, otherwise known as IRTPA. And basically, IRTPA called for, you know, the creation of this massive, you know, quote, information sharing environment. And that's really what kicked it off right there. That and, of course, the 2003's Homeland Security Act and then the Patriot Act before it.
So explain, you know, it's... There seems to be a contradiction here, or, you know, at least there's the claim, the espoused goal or reason for the existence of this multi-leveled surveillance has to do with combating terrorism. That's the
right.
official line.
How do they justify,
how does that relate to peaceful protest such as the Occupy mobilizations?
Right. Well, it's interesting. After fusion centers started springing up, it was actually right on the heels of the concept's inception. And, you know, ACTIC, the Arizona Fusion Center, was actually one of the first. It was established in 2004. And it was either in late 2003 or 2004 that the concept of fusion centers shifting from terrorism, strictly focused on terrorism prevention, the idea came about that they would shift to a mission of all hazards prevention. So basically anything that could be a hazard is under their jurisdiction. Or, you know, it's perfectly acceptable for them to, you know, drill down on anything that could be hazardous. And so, for example, in Arizona, the managing agency in partnership with the FBI and Department of Homeland Security and the Arizona Department of Homeland Security of ACTIC is the Arizona Department of Public Safety. And I talked to the Arizona Department of Public Safety Intelligence Bureau captain, who's basically the manager of the Fusion Center, about this all-hazards focus. And he laid it out in a very, you know, logical way, where he said, well, you know, in Arizona, we don't really have Al-Qaeda storming our borders. So, you know, it was a logical progression. I mean, what else are you going to do with this massively funded, very well-equipped intelligence sharing, you know, collective, unless, you know, you're going to shift it onto other things in terrorist activity, because it's just not happening.
So talk about how it actually worked. Talk about the various levels. That is, of course, let's begin with the infiltration, the use of... well, police informants, infiltrators into the movement.
Right. Well, one of the findings of the report that's discussed in there is the Phoenix Police Department dispatched an undercover officer to infiltrate Occupy Phoenix and other activist groups in 2011. And according to some activist accounts, this undercover officer actually infiltrated in June of 2011, July of 2011, which of course was before the, you know, the actual development of Occupy Wall Street. And from these accounts, the undercover officer's focus at that time was really heavily on protest plans of the American Legislative Exchange Council that were planning on holding a conference in Scottsdale, which is a wealthy Phoenix suburb, in late November of 2011. So this undercover officer presented himself in this Phoenix coffee shop that was actually voted by the Phoenix New Times as being, you know, basically the best place to find an anarchist. So, of course, he went to this coffee shop, and he presented himself as a homeless Mexican national by the name of Saul DeLora. And basically what I've heard is that he said he had just gotten out of prison, and he was living on the street, and he really, really hated cops, and you know, he wanted to learn everything there was to learn about anarchism, and anything, you know, and everything there was to learn about the plans to protest ALEC. And ALEC, of course, the American Legislative Exchange Council, is a public-private partnership in its own right. It's a legislative public-private partnership where we see, you know, hundreds of the nations and the world's top corporations sitting down to adopt legislation that, you know, we the public have to live with, that of course benefits the agendas of these corporations. And so records show that that the public-private intelligence sharing partnership was also working quite well through the Arizona Fusion Center for the benefit of ALEC and other corporations that were either part of ALEC or that were, you know, subjects of other, you know, later Occupy Phoenix protests, and that this undercover officer actually attended a number of meetings at the Fusion Center to basically, you know, discuss activist plans for this protest. And it's also interesting to note that a terrorism liaison officer with the Phoenix Police Department Bureau of Homeland Defense had invited the chief of security for the resort that the ALEC conference was going to be at to attend one of these Fusion Center meetings with the undercover officer present. So there you have, you know, this undercover officer who, you know, is on the street infiltrating the activist community, meeting in the Arizona Fusion Center with the guy who is basically the de facto head of security in Arizona for the ALEC conference. And, you know, this guy and the terrorism liaison officer I mentioned had attended a number of other meetings where they were meeting with security personnel employed by, and other personnel also employed by ALEC, as well as ALEC member corporations. A man by Mark Davis took, or excuse me, a man by the name of Mark Davis took part in one of these meetings, and Mark Davis is the chief of corporate security for Bayer Healthcare, which was a longtime prominent ALEC member corporation at that time.
So you have this activity going on, basically Homeland Security money subsidizing police and other agency coordination with private security at this resort and guarding this ALEC convention. Talk about what else happens with that information, how it gets dispersed to other fusion centers, how it gets sent around nationally. That is, in another article I was reading, that the data collected at these 31 fusion centers passes on activities in from some 50 cities in 26 states. So it's a right. It's not just this the Arizona stuff. While no, exemplary, no, certainly. Is certainly not unique.
Right. Actually, there's over 70 fusion centers in the country right now. So we've got more fusion centers than we have states. And what I got in these records that's discussed in this report was that fusion centers were regularly sending advisories on local Occupy activity around to other fusion centers, you know, like the giant information sharing network or the information sharing environment that they're intended to be, you know, through IRCPA. And also engaged in this type of activity, sending out advisories and other intelligence products, things like that, about Occupy groups was the Department of Homeland Security National Operations Center. This center, this part of DHS, would also send out advisories. And then aside from just the fusion centers, you know, we have all these other agencies involved in fusion centers. So, you know, one advisory may be sent out by the Central Florida Intelligence Exchange, for example, which is a fusion center in Florida that goes around the nation. And then, you know, somebody, you know, a federal counterterrorism person engaged in some fusion center, say the U.S. Marshals Service or the Office of the United States Postal Inspector, would send out also other advisories. You know, so it's just this giant sea of advisories. And, you know, everybody across the nation telling all these counterterrorism people, telling all these other counterterrorism people what a handful of people in, you know, Duluth or something are doing or planning on doing that weekend. It's pretty ridiculous. And a lot of the stuff focused on really, really non-threatening activity. You know, the vast majority of it was on absolutely non-threatening activity. And, you know, things like flash mobs, where kids would show up and dance and sing, stuff like that.
At some level, even referring to it as a counterterrorism network mystifies or obfuscates the fact that it's actually a giant state/corporate surveillance network.
Right. Just calling it a counterterrorism network or apparatus or something like that sort of makes it seem like, unfortunately, like it's a single, big monolithic entity, but it's basically every law enforcement officer in the country. Essentially, that's what it is. They're damn near close to every single law enforcement officer in the country. And then, there are other means of gathering information that presumably may very well make it out in these advisories to other fusion centers. Aside from the undercover cop stuff, he was a key information intelligence gathering asset in Phoenix. But in Florida, FBI records that we obtained through FOIA showed that special agents with certain task forces in Florida were recommending that tripwires be established within, one Occupy group. I think it was possibly Jacksonville, and then and another group, Occupy Gainesville. They were using tripwire informants at a shopping mall, so their informants were mall cops who were reporting to the FBI. So it goes outside of that too, to these private sector tripwire informants and mall cops. So it's quite a network. And Tripwire is a Operation Tripwire is an initiative that was started by the FBI in 2003. And like all of this stuff, its purpose was also to catch terrorism. In the case of Operation Tripwire, the plan was to use private sector informants to detect and stop domestic terrorism. So, for example, if you own a fertilizer store and some strange guy who's sweating profusely and twitching comes in and buys a whole bunch of fertilizer, you could report it to your FBI contact handler through Operation Tripwire, and it could be reported, to the Joint Terrorism Task Force in your area. Then it could spread also to the National Joint Terrorism Task Force, which is co-situated with the National Counterterrorism, the National Counterterrorism Center, which is operated by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which of course is an umbrella agency that includes the CIA, a number of military defense, military intelligence agencies, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security. So, something gathered by a mall cop, say for example, through Operation Tripwire, could go right to the top in a heartbeat. Pretty ludicrous and disturbing, I think.
You're listening to Bo Hodai, the key author of the recent study jointly released by the Center for Media Democracy here in Madison and published by DBA Press, the study entitled Dissent or Terror, How the Nation's Counterterrorism Apparatus in Partnership with Corporate America Turned on Occupy Wall Street. And, of course, it goes much deeper than Occupy Wall Street. Let's talk about I want to get to the nub of all of this coordination. We've alluded to the Alex stuff going on in Arizona, but let's deepen that discussion of those corporate links. It's interesting, again, these ostensibly public policing agencies there, again, ostensibly to protect the public interest in collusion with major corporations.
Right. A lot of this stuff, like I said, the primary narrative of the report is the Arizona Fusion Center. So we dug into a lot of examples of stuff we talk about on a national level with Arizona. So a lot of public-private intelligence-sharing partnerships, in these counterterrorism, homeland security entities were, the establishment of these things were promulgated at the federal level. And, like the fusion centers themselves through legislative action and executive orders. And one thing that I got through FOIA from the Department of Homeland Security is DHS's... I'm probably going to screw up the name, but it's basically their private sector information sharing working plan. And basically it calls for greater private sector involvement, corporate involvement in fusion centers, primarily toward the aim of critical infrastructure and key resources protection, what is known as CIKR. And that's really how a lot of this started, was the stated aim of, well, we need to protect critical infrastructure that's owned by the private sector, such as, you know, nuclear power plants, things like that, from terrorist attacks. And you'll see that it's really expanded out also, you know, largely through executive orders issued by George W. Bush and other legislative action from the Patriot Act on up, to mean many more things, including things that can have an impact on the functions of government, the functions of, you know, private sector business as usual, the, you know, public morale in the nation, national public morale, can be considered an item of protection, something that needs to be protected. And so, for example, back to the DHS Public-Private Intelligence Sharing Working Plan, this working plan was drawn up between DHS INA, Intelligence and Analysis, and a public-private information sharing working group that consisted of several corporations. I think it was close to 50 Fortune 500 corporations and banks. So, of course, it included Bank of America, Wells Fargo, things like that, you know, very large institutions that people in the Occupy Wall Street movement were targeting with protest. And through these initiatives that have called for public-private intelligence sharing partnership, we've seen the development of several public-private intelligence sharing partnerships at the federal level. The chief of those are the Domestic Security Alliance Council, which is called DSAC, which is a partnership between the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, and 29 major corporations and banks, including Citigroup, Bank of America, Barclays, Walmart, things like that. And then another one is also InfraGuard, which is primarily administered by the FBI. It is supplied intelligence by the Department of Homeland Security Office of Intelligence and Analysis. The FBI can pass these intelligence products on to its private sector InfraGuard members. InfraGuard is a key way in which private sector, or these corporations that are known as private sector stakeholders, are represented in fusion centers nationwide through local chapters of InfraGuard, all of which are administered by the FBI. And then, through other initiatives that have called for, you know, presidential orders, things like that, they call for greater, even greater than what we already have discussed here, even greater private sector partnership with our publicly funded, you know, counterterrorism fusion centers. Fusion centers have opened up little offices within the fusion center that deal with the private sector and that pass out additional intelligence products to the private sector. In the case of Arizona, that is known as the ACTIC Community Liaison Program, which is managed by a detective who's employed by the Phoenix Police Department Bureau of Homeland Defense, which staffs the ACTIC Threat Mitigation Unit, which, as we've seen with all of these things, the common objective is critical infrastructure, key resources, protection. Although what we see in records that we've gathered from Phoenix Police Department Bureau of Homeland Defense is that during, you know, the rise and the strong period of Occupy Phoenix's membership, the fusion center was basically giving banks and other corporate entities heads up, saying, hey, these guys, Occupy Phoenix, they're planning on marching to your place and holding signs, or, oh my God, they're going to have giant puppets with them, or what's another one? Oh, Occupy Phoenix was planning on holding a credit card shredding ceremony, sidewalk, and so the fusion center made sure that all the banks knew about that, even though, of course, it was no threat to the banks.
I don't know, shredding credit cards, how subversive. You know, Bo Hodai, you've referenced that a lot of these programs had their origins under the presidency of W. Bush, but we have to, of course, make note of the fact that the chronology says that most of it has expanded and increased under the
right.
presidency of Barack Obama. I want to go to the phones. Let's take a first caller. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Yes. Governor Walker said that he was going to be at least considering infiltrating the Occupy the uprising with agent provocateurs. And I'm wondering if there are some telltale signs that the person you're dealing with is such an agent. For example, if that person would be talking about violence or if that person would be asking too many questions. Are there some
right.
ways we could recognize these individuals?
Well, there was something that one of the activists in Phoenix I interviewed mentioned. He basically said, you know, this undercover cop who had infiltrated under the name of Saul DeLaura, he said that Saul would do this thing that would really give him away because people actually really didn't trust him, even though he managed to hang out with these activists for so long. But he would just appear whenever, you know, mention was made of protests of the American Legislative Exchange Council. He would just suddenly appear and then, you know, slowly inject himself into the conversation. So I guess that could be it, you know, the sudden appearance of somebody when certain key topics are discussed. Also, people in Phoenix said he was creepy, so maybe, you know, keep an eye out for creepy people.
Yeah, that's a tough one in a place like Madison, or in any major city for that matter. You know, creepy is pretty subjective. Let's continue on. I got a number of other questions, but I want to, you know, get our callers in today as well. But let's go into the topic of data mining. Talk about how social media has been used by these surveillance agencies.
Right. Well, most of these on the national level, most of the Fusion Center advisories that I saw in records that I had obtained had been called from, you know, what is called open source intelligence, which can mean a lot of different things. Some of these things would be, you know, actual news products, like, you know, somebody at the National Operations Center, DHS National Operations Center, would send around a report from ABC News in which a protester had been interviewed and said that we are going to do X, Y, and Z. And so that would be open source intelligence that they would pass around. The primary source of open source intelligence that I've seen in the records that I've gathered is social media. So it's basically data mining. You know, your Facebook posts, Twitter, blogs, YouTube videos, things like that. And, you know, it is a fact that fusion centers have people sitting there culling social media on a constant basis. In Arizona, for example, there's a woman by the name of Brenda Dowhan who was hired with a more than $1,090,000 grant from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security to the Phoenix Police Department Bureau of Homeland Defense. Brenda Dowhan's title is Terrorism Liaison All Hazards Analyst, and she works, in the Fusion Center. And her job is basically, from what I've seen over the course of 2011 and 2012, was to sit there and monitor the Facebook posts and other social media of people engaged in Occupy Phoenix and other activist groups. She actually responded to an email that had been sent out by an FBI agent to the Arizona Fusion Center personnel, in which she said, "Hi, my job is to monitor Occupy Phoenix, and basically I'm going to continue to monitor their Facebook stuff and let me know if there's anything I can do to help you." And it goes deeper than that also. Part of this $1 million and what $1,090,000 grant that PPD got to hire their ACTIC terrorism liaison all hazards social media queen analyst, $600,000 of that money was used to buy software that is called the SAS MEMEX Fusion Center solution, or it's also called the Intelligence Management Module, I believe. And this system, there's not a lot of information readily available through open source intelligence that describes what the system's exact capabilities are. However, I looked at patent and trademark records associated with the system, as well as a couple of court files, court cases, where it seems, and also promotional material that SAS Memex had put out there, and it seems that the system not only manages other intelligence streams like confidential informants, police reports, driver's license photographs, letters, files, things like that, whatever intelligence streams you want to input into it. But it also manages open source intelligence and also obtains, apparently, open source intelligence. So it appears to be a system that actually engages in the culling of the internet for certain pieces of open source intelligence, which, presumably would be that it would seek out based on user-defined values. So you could say, I want you to look at these websites or something like that, and it engages in text mining. And SAS Memex technologies, aside from text mining, will also map relationships of social media users, and they will also, through the mass collation of blog posts, Facebook posts, what have you, they'll also map changes in attitudes towards any given subject. And it's very interesting stuff. Again, I don't know exactly what that SAS Memex system that the Fusion Center purchased does, but it would seem to do things like this from what I can gather. And this is what Brenda Dauhan does, so it would make perfect sense that they would buy this for her with the same grant money that they used to hire her. And then also in Tucson, the Tucson Police Department, it's an amazingly long title for this analyst, but their regional intelligence analyst who works at ACTIC, or who works with ACTIC personnel to cover southern Arizona, she was also outfitted. Her name is Carmen Rios, and she was also outfitted through close to $200,000 of U.S. Department of Homeland Security grant funding with a open source intelligence data mining software tool called the Open Mind software suite, which is made by 3iMind, which is a Swiss company. And anyways, it does the exact same thing that I've just described, except it's not quite as fancy, and that it doesn't manage full intelligence cases for you or all the intelligence behind one case. It just deals with open source intelligence. It'll call the internet, various websites, blogs, Facebook, Twitter feeds, all of this stuff, based on user-defined values, and map out relationships, changes in attitudes, other demographic stuff, and deliver intelligence products to the intelligence analyst who's using it. In this case, that would be the Tucson Police Department's regional intelligence analyst, Carmen Rios, as well as the Pima County Sheriff's Office intelligence analyst. And it's also interesting to note that, in the case of Phoenix, the intelligence analyst, Brenda Dauhan, who does all of this data mining of social media, activist social media, basically exclusively over the course of these 2 years, she was also supplied with logs of people who had been arrested, issued citations, or given warnings by police in conjunction with Occupy Phoenix activity. And, these logs contain the names, the physical addresses, the physical descriptions, sometimes the addresses, driver's license photos, driver's license numbers, sometimes social security numbers, other identifying information for basically anybody who Phoenix Police Department had determined was associated with Occupy Phoenix through even the slightest of interactions, such as a warning. Of course.
So then, it can be passed on nationally, of course.
It could be, yes. In this case, I didn't see anything where she had sent on these, something as detailed as the arrest logs, although she certainly was distributing information about Occupy Phoenix nationally. For somebody whose job it is to monitor the Facebook pages of activists, it would be, of course, tremendously useful to have a log containing the names of all of these activists. So that's something that's very interesting to know.
Talk about the use of facial recognition technology and how that's passed along, the grabbing of people's photos from Facebook and how they're moved along.
Right. Again, with the case of Actic in Arizona, the records that we obtained showed a few instances in which facial recognition technology had been applied to photographs of individuals found on Facebook. And basically these people, in one case that we discussed, they were trying to identify someone who I call a girl because the photograph appears to show the image of a teenage girl who was accused of having said something inflammatory online. She had said something to the effect of, like, good, kill us all, make us a martyr, or something like that. I guess she was talking about, she felt that the weight of the police department or something was really coming down on them or something. I don't know. But she had said something inflammatory. And anyway, so an anonymous tipster through this tips system that delivers anonymous tips to the Fusion Center wrote, talking about whatever these inflammatory things this young girl had said, and then the terrorism liaison, all hazards analyst Brenda Dowhan, as well as a couple of other Fusion Center personnel, apparently tried to identify her based on a Facebook photograph by applying facial recognition technology to it. In this case, they were foiled because the girl was wearing eyeglasses. And actually, I talked to the DPS Intelligence Bureau captain who's in charge, or there's a manager of Actic, and he said that that's actually an unfortunate thing that does happen with their facial recognition technology. I guess it's not perfect, because one of the key things it measures is the distance between the eyes. So if that is obscured, then it draws a blank. Yet, it doesn't stop it from spending millions of dollars on this stuff.
Right.
Given the fact that millions of people wear glasses. But anyways,
go ahead. No, we're getting kind of short in the hour, and I want to get, there's a couple of people that have questions for you, so I want to make sure that we get them in. You're listening to Bo Hodai, investigative journalist working on the surveillance harassment of the Occupy movement and other social forms of social protest. Let's go back to the phones. Hello, caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, isn't this just really an extension of what has happened even back in the 20s and 30s with the communists and the unions, and also even when I was working for the State Department of Revenue in the era of Woodstock, they were going to have something up in Wisconsin like Woodstock, and I remember one of the special agents from the department was getting guns so they could go up there and protect the people against Woodstock and so forth. It's just been more extended, not only by the corporations themselves, I mean by the government, but the corporations, but even back then, if you protested or strike, you were on a blacklist for that by the corporation. So I'll hang up and ask him what he thinks about that. Thank you.
Sure, I think you're right. I mean, there really isn't anything new under the sun. This isn't new behavior. I think that especially, like you said, the blacklisting of union workers during the rise of union, and of course, the police department work on behalf of corporations against union workers, things like that. That's not new. Of course, in the 60s. The FBI engaged in COINTELPRO against many activists groups. It's nothing new. However, it's basically the same old thing, but on steroids.
Right. This is exponential increase.
Right. It's the post 9/11 world. All of the money and resources that have been dumped into agencies that of course previously engaged in this type of activity is just blossomed into something bigger.
It certainly gives a whole new dimension, a whole new meaning to the phrase that's bandied about quite a bit of a public-private partnership.
Right. here.
Let's go back to the phones. Hello, caller. You're on the air.
Okay. I'm interested in the moral aspect and what agencies are mostly involved. Is it CIA, FBI, Defense Information Agency, to name sort of the big three? Who's doing the lion's share of what? And you know, like Michael Moore reported, they were investigating a Quaker group, and 1,200 groups were investigated in the early stages of the Iraq War. And things like that. Do you know more about that operation and how they operate? But what is the size of the number of people involved? Is it 1,000, 10,000, 100,000? How many people are arrayed against us?
Thank you, caller.
Thanks. I don't think I could put a number on it because you know it is such a large apparatus. We really are talking about all of these, you know, municipal, county, state, and federal agencies that are engaged in this apparatus primarily through fusion centers. So I don't think, at least I can't put a number to it. I'm sure somebody really sat down and spent a long time crunching the numbers. We might be able to put a number to it, or at least a good ballpark. The primary actor that I've seen has been the FBI. Aside from, you know, the myriad local law enforcement agencies that basically act as the boots on the ground, the FBI has definitely been very, very active. The FBI, through joint terrorism task forces, is active in all of these fusion centers that I'm aware of. The FBI co-administers in a lead role both of the federal public-private intelligence sharing partnerships we discussed, DSAC and InfraGuard. The FBI also has close ties to private entities that were engaged in the nationwide monitoring of the Occupy Wall Street movement, and namely that would be the Major Cities Chiefs Association, which conducted and coordinated a number of meetings, I believe in 2011 and also possibly 2012. I can say with certainty in 2011 in October, they coordinated a nationwide meeting of a conference call of chiefs of major cities, and this was co-coordinated with the Southern Nevada Counterterrorism Center, which is, of course, another fusion center. Major Cities Chiefs Association has very close ties to the FBI, and they continued throughout 2011, 2012, to provide intelligence bulletins to Fusion Center personnel nationwide regarding the Occupy movement. And actually, in this this conference call that I was talking about in October of 2011, MCCA, this group with very close ties to the FBI, advocated for the increased use of Fusion Centers in monitoring Occupy groups nationwide. So, and there may be another couple or FBI-related things that I may be forgetting, but those are definitely the primary ones. And
Bohut, I talk about, on a number of my programs here over the last several years, actually, I've talked about, had people, guests on, talking about the militarization of society, the militarization of the police. Can you talk at all about direct ties in this network you've been describing to the military, to military intelligence, domestic operations of the military?
Yeah, that's something I'm very, very interested in. That's something that I'm going to be following up on through further investigative work. unfortunately, at this point in time, I don't know too much about it. What I do know is from a couple of documents that I found suggest that defense intelligence agencies are involved in the Arizona Fusion Center. The Kansas Fusion Center actually openly advertises that defense intelligence agencies are active in their fusion center. The National Counterterrorism Center is administered by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, and that office has purview over a number of military intelligence agencies. An interesting document that we got, that was a bulletin it was distributed to Fusion Center personnel nationwide, was a document that described public health concerns and safety hazards associated with occupying encampments nationwide. The document itself appears to have been created by the Central Florida Intelligence Exchange, which is administered by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. However, the records indicate that the document was distributed to Fusion Center personnel nationwide by the Pentagon. The Pentagon Office, the Pentagon Force Protection Agency, I believe. And that agency, it's really sort of bizarre because that agency, from what I gather, even though it has its own intelligence office, and that was the office that distributed this, is tasked with protecting the Pentagon specifically. So I don't know why they were active in distributing this. But
well, I'm glad to find out that the Pentagon is now concerned with public health.
Right. It's very interesting.
256. We're about down to the end of the hour, but we do have one caller. Let's see if we can get them in this time. Hello, caller. You're on the air. No, it's still that same caller that has the radio turned on. Let's go back. We have about 8 minutes, Bohodai. Let's talk about the broader implications of this surveillance state, what it means, and I think more importantly, or just as important, what can we do about it? I'm sure some of our listeners today are thinking, oh my, this is just so massive and so all-encompassing, and what opportunity or what chance do we have to mount any kind of resistance? Talk about that, if you would.
Right. In Madison, you know, you guys are fortunate enough to have the Center for Media and Democracy in your own backyard, and I'm working with them on stuff like this. Maybe support groups that are doing this kind of stuff, possibly what you could do also that I think would be tremendous would be to start submitting your own public records requests and FOIA requests. I recommend public records requests of state agencies over FOIA requests because federal agencies can be very difficult to deal with.
Slow.
But, what you might want to do is find out some information about your own local Fusion Center and submit public records requests on topics that you feel, you know, they may have been active in the monitoring or surveillance of. And get that information out there. If you don't have a website or somebody who's willing to publish it for you, I would certainly be happy to publish it for you, or the Center for Media and Democracy, I'm sure, would be happy to deal with any records that people obtain, and we can work with each other to distribute the stuff and expose what they're doing. Also, a dual purpose of this would be to let them know, the people engaged in this activity, that we, the public, do care about this, and sort of put them on notice that we want to know what is going on with our tax dollars. Other things you can do, because with there are jurisdictional issues with submitting public records requests to Fusion Centers. In some states, they're administered by one agency, and the whole operation seems to fall under the purview of that agency. Whereas in other states, it's truly a hodgepodge. So you can submit records requests to agencies that are active in the Fusion Center, directed specifically towards those personnel. And if anybody has if anybody would like to do this and would like to discuss it further, because I don't want to take up all the time discussing the intricacies of this stuff, but you can contact me through either CMD or through my publication DBA Press, and I would be happy to help you.
Do you want to give? By the way, your DBA Press, give a link to that so people can see the larger work that's been created off of your investigations.
All of the larger work is available through CMD. All of the breakout articles that we did, as well as the primary report, and then there's also some media discussion on there also. So that would be available through PR Watch, which is an internet publication of CMD, or through Source Watch. which is also a publication of CMD. And then the source materials that we've been discussing are available on DBA Press. I've archived them there, so that's dbapress.com. And I can also be contacted through DBA Press or through CMD. And I'd be happy to help anybody figure out how to submit effective public records requests in their own jurisdictions. And then, you know, speaking to the national implications, one thing that I thought was very interesting was, you know, as you mentioned, a lot of this stuff was set up by George W. Bush, but of course it's expanded under Barack Obama. And we have records that show that a number of agencies, including the FBI, the U.S. Capitol Police, well, I'll stick to those because those are the only two I'm remembering off the top of my head, were active in monitoring the protest activities of citizens who were protesting, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012. And, of course, they were protesting provision 1021 and, I believe, 1022. These provisions that call for or the possible detention of any U.S. citizen who is even believed to or suspected of having engaged in hostilities or terrorist acts or supporting hostilities or terrorist acts, belligerent acts, however broadly it is defined, without due process. And, you know, it's a scary thing to see that these citizens who are concerned that they may be stripped of due process if they're branded as terrorists are being monitored by counterterrorism personnel. It's almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's very a very kind of Orwellian world, certainly.
Right.
Well, look, Boho Dai, I want to thank you for being on today. You've been listening today to Boho Dai, who's a freelance reporter. He's a regular contributor to the Center for Media and Democracy based here in Madison and the publisher of DBA Press. The work we've been talking about today, recently released, what is called Dissent or Terror: How the Nation's Counterterrorism Apparatus in Partnership with Corporate America Turned on Occupy Wall Street. Again, Boho Dai, I want to thank you very much and hope to have you on sometime again in the future. I want to thank Nigel on the boards. I want to thank Carol out on the phones. I want to thank you, our listeners, you, our callers. I've been your host for this hour. My name is Alan Ruff.
I cried when they shot Medgar Evers. Tears ran down my spine. And I cried when they shot Mr. Kennedy, as though I'd lost a father of mine. But Malcolm X got what was coming. He got what he asked for this time. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal.